Hey, it's Bill Klaproth, your host for Which Way Is Life, the podcast designed to help you find a healthier, inspired life. This is episode 48. Two times a week, I interview trendsetting doctors, fitness professionals, life coaches, entrepreneurs, and other inspiring guests in a quest for transformational discovery and positive change, hopefully that you can put to use in your own life. And this is the podcast that dares to be different by getting you to the goods right away. So if you only have a few minutes to listen, you can walk away with something useful right at the top. So excited to have Gabe Howard on with us today. How you doing, Gabe?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. Gabe is an award-winning writer, mental health activist, and sought-after speaker and educator. In 2003, he was formally diagnosed with bipolar and anxiety disorders after being committed to a psychiatric hospital. Prior to being diagnosed, Gabe suffered the effects of untreated bipolar disorder and thought about suicide daily. Thankfully, he's still with us, and he shares his story coming up, and his story is very inspiring, and he shares his story in an effort to reduce stigma, promote recovery, and improve understanding of mental illness and mental health. Gabe, thank you again for being here with me today. I like to start the show with what I call the one thing. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Can you quickly share with us one thing someone can do to improve their life today?
Take responsibility for something that's not your fault.
Tell me about that.
I think that we all have this idea that because something is not our fault, because we didn't do it on purpose, that we can just let it go. For example, I live with bipolar disorder, and that's not my fault. It's an illness. But I have to take responsibility for it. It's my issue, and it's nobody else's fault. It's just sort of bad luck from the universe. But by taking responsibility for it, I can control it as much as one can control an illness, and I was able to move forward in my own life. So rather than get bogged down in the idea that, hey, it's not my fault, this isn't fair, I instead flipped the script and said, hey, this is mine, and I will handle it.
So take responsibility for something that is not your fault. Interesting. And Gabe, before we get into your story, let us in on your personal life. Who are you when you're not saving the world?
Well, I think that anybody that's trying to save the world usually does that full time. I mean, does Superman really go home and
I guess
act
he doesn't.
Like Clark Kent?
Does he? I mean, really, does Superman take weekends off? Probably not, right? Hey, it's Friday at 5. I'll see you boys on Monday. See ya.
Oh, man, who... It's fascinating because I think I always was kind of this save the world guy. It sort of does fit into the stereotype of you know, bipolar disorder to have these manic grandiose ideas and you know that my personality is even larger than life. But I think at the end of the day, who I really am when I'm not saving the world, when all the lights are off, and when I'm alone is actually kind of a pretty I'm a pretty shy person, believe it or not. I have low self-esteem, and people don't believe me when I say that. They're like, dude, you never shut up. You talk in front of crowds. You're good at public speaking. How can you be this anxious person with low self-esteem? And I'm great at faking it. That's really what it is, but it causes me all kinds of problems. I've never walked off a stage thinking I did a good job. And that's kind of the core of who I am.
No,
you know, I also
like
hockey.
Okay. And there's that. And there is that. Now, come on. How can you say you have low self-esteem? Seriously. After all that you've been through and all that you've accomplished since your diagnosis, how can you say that?
See, it's sort of like the tortured artist. And... I strongly relate to that. You read in history of all these great artists. I mean, people whose works are selling for millions upon millions of dollars, and they're the masters, the greats. And in reality, they hated their work. And you know, people they track that to mental illness and everything else, but they just had this idea that they weren't good enough or that it could always be better. And on one hand, that drove them. But on the other hand, it tortured them. And you know, when I say I have low self-esteem, I suppose that I don't, in that I'm capable of, you know, I'm on a radio show and you have what, 50, 60 million listeners?
But millions, gazillions.
Million gazillion people gazillions are hearing this right now.
Are hearing you right now.
That's so incredibly impressive. And they're all better off for having done so. No, but there's an element of bravado. I mean, it's easy to fake certain things. It's easy to understand that people want confidence in a speaker. But, you know, I'm a pretty humble guy, believe it or not. I always think that I can be better, do better, try harder. And, of course, I'm a people pleaser. So if 100 people like me and one person doesn't, that's the person I'm thinking about. Mm. And isn't my core.
Yeah, that's like the 100, the 100% rule, where you do 100 things right and you do one thing wrong on the 101st try, and then you're like, oh, God, I suck. I'm horrible. I'm a bad person. But no, see, you can't look at it like that. It's exactly. Those 100 things that you do right count. In fact, the lady that I had on my last podcast number 47, Dr. Barb Jaffe, we talk about expectations and setting that expectation so high where you're expecting perfection, you're really setting yourself up for disappointment. And then perfection is hard to achieve. And then you're always disappointed. I didn't phrase that right. Or I stumbled over this line, or I wanted to talk about that and I forgot. I suck. See, if you get into that mindset, it's going to be more debilitating for you. So you kind of got to, bring it down a little bit. And you are good enough, Gabe. Those talks you give and everything you do are wonderful. I'm just telling you now.
that's awesome. I do appreciate it. But the thing that I try to tell people is, the thing that your mind remembers are things that are different. So if you're constantly remembering that you did something wrong, it means that you don't do things wrong that often, because that's unusual. And we recall unusual things. So if you're constantly remembering that you did things well, that might be the unusual thing. I have no scientific proof to back this up, but truly, we all talk about the unusual. That's what we want to talk about, the things that are different. And it's the old analogy, dog bites man, no story, man bites dog, everybody's talking about it. We do things right. I do things right all the time. So the thing that sticks to memory is when I made a mistake. Because it's unusual, because I work really hard. And I think a lot of people are in my boat.
You know, I think so, too. And, speaking of your story, your story, I think, could be a lot of people's story before you were diagnosed. Behavior that was misunderstood by your family, feelings of being misunderstood, unlovable and insignificant, thoughts of suicide and more. I mean, life was really difficult for you at that point. Tell us about that time in your life when you were really spiraling out of control.
It was a very difficult time, but here's the thing. I didn't know that it was difficult, or it was so difficult I was just bogged down by life. This is the horror, and I'm using that word on purpose. This is the horror of bipolar disorder. You go back and forth between suicidal depression, literally the belief that if you were to die, the world would be better, that you're better off dead, and that the people around you would be better off if you were dead. But then you go all the way to mania, godlike mania, where the whole world revolves around you and everything that you say, think, and do is of amazing, epic, and godlike proportions. And then you just go back and forth. It's just a whiplash effect of ridiculous feelings that you can never quite get a handle on. And then sometimes you're in the middle. People forget about the middle of bipolar disorder. It's often described as, bipolar disorder, you're either sad or you're happy. Yeah, you're also just in the middle. And the dangerous part about being in the middle is that's when you make your relationships. That's when you build your life, when you're normal. I'm making air quotes for those that can't see me through my phone. And then when you're really, really depressed or you're really, really manic or you do something wrong, people say, hey, I know he can be good. I saw it. He's doing that on purpose. He's misbehaving. He's bad. I know that he can do well because I've seen him do well. So it's just people don't know what to think. And included in people don't know what to think, I didn't know what to think. I mean, one minute I'm king of the world, the next minute I'm scum of the earth, and the next minute, you know, I'm a guy with a job and I'm boring. And it just goes back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And it was really off-putting to me, and it was off-putting to those around me. I wasn't reliable. And a lot of the things that I did during that time, from the way that I treated people to drug and alcohol abuse, hypersexuality, and everything in between, just drove people further and further away. And I'll end right here and let you ask another question, but I get it. I wouldn't have wanted to be my friend back then. I didn't even like me back then. So I understood why it drove people away. But of course, as I drove people away, became more and more desperate, more and more lonely, more and more misunderstood. And because there was an illness at the core of all this, I became more and more sick.
So it really was a spiral that you were just going down and down in this never-ending circle.
So it was like a spring. I mean, down, up, down, up, down, up. And the people around you are just like, all right, that's nonsense. And like I said, I on one hand, I was really, really sad, you know, when people would navigate away from me, because I cared about them very much and I felt very, very lonely. But, you know, you got to save yourself. I understood now, I didn't understand then, but I understand now why this happened. But it didn't make it easier. And I think that's really some of the trauma that comes with, a mental illness diagnosis. It's the way that people treat you. You know, people hang on a lot harder when they understand what you're going through. If I would have been diagnosed with an illness that was more understood, people would be like, well, yeah, we went to visit Gabe and he threw up on me. But I understand that he threw up on me because he's really, really sick. So I told him it was okay, and I just took a shower and put on a new shirt. But the things that I did, people didn't understand that it was coming from a place of illness or confusion or anything. They thought that I was being mean or vindictive or just unreliable. They thought I was a bad friend. Mm-hmm. And when somebody treats you poorly, save yourself. Get away from the person treating you poorly. Nobody had any, including me, had any understanding that I wasn't treating them poorly on purpose. I was treating them poorly because I was sick. Mm-hmm. And of course, since nobody knew I was sick, including myself, I wasn't exactly getting any help either. So again, it just compounded.
So you were down, you were up, you were down, you were up. In your mind, were you like, I need to find help, or this is normal? I'm just this type of a person that my life, I'm going to be down in the dumps and king of the world the next minute. Or were you inside going, man, I got to talk to somebody about this, or I've got to find help for this because this isn't right? Did you have moments of clarity like that when you were in the middle?
No, that's the fascinating part. My presentation of bipolar disorder could have been spotted by anybody that read a 500-word article on bipolar disorder. That's I presented so perfectly. It was just so obvious to anybody that spent any amount of time with me or observed me for any amount of time that I was not hard to diagnose. We'll just say that. But see, nobody understood it. We don't teach mental health in school. I mean, we do more now, but you know, I'm 40 years old, so we sure as heck didn't do it 25 years ago. My parents and myself, you know, I was raised blue collar. My mom's a stay-at-home mom. My dad's a truck driver. And birds of a feather really do flock together. So we were all blue-collar people. And, you know, I was raised to be a man. And, you know, with men, we don't talk about our emotions or our feelings. And if we're sick, we pick up some mud and we rub it on whatever hurts. And then we feel better the next day. And so this is just what I understood. I really just thought that it was me and that I was bad. I didn't think, again, that there was something that a doctor could do or that a therapist could do. There was just a lot of preconceived notions and incorrect information that I was making decisions based on. Mm-hmm. And my family was the same way. Family are very good people. They're not bad people. They just had no idea. And also, not for nothing, I thought about suicide every day of my life. Ugh. But see, nobody talks about suicide in pretty much anyway. So I just assumed everybody else was thinking about it too. I didn't know that that was unusual. I just assumed everybody had this internal live-or-die struggle. Since nobody challenged that belief, I just figured they were all thinking about it too. I thought I was very normal. Bad, so wrong,
but right, normal. But normal. So with your daily thoughts of suicide, what was it that you hung on to that kept you from doing the unthinkable?
That is a very fascinating question, and I have probably answered it in about 600 different ways. So people that have followed me for a long time are like, man, he should really like figure out the answer to that. And I think that really is the core. I don't know. I finally got help when I was done. I was ready to do it. I was ready to end my life. I had a suicide plan. I had a place to go. I had everything in order. And I was casually dating a woman at the time, and she had an understanding of mental illness. She herself has major depression. Her mother was a psychiatric nurse. She had taken some psychology classes, learned about, you know, various things in college. So she spotted it pretty quick. She figured it out. She cracked the code. And she asked me point blank, looked me right in the eyes and said, are you thinking of killing yourself? And I said, yes. Why would I lie about it? I didn't think it was a secret. Her asking me about it actually proved that I was right all along, that everybody else is thinking about it too. Why else would she ask? I mean, clearly this must be common knowledge. She asked the right question. And she said, you know, she reacted very strongly and said, we need to go to the hospital. And I said, well, there's no reason to go to the hospital. Sick people go to the hospital and I'm not sick. And we argued back and forth for a while. And she finally said, you know, listen, here's what we're going to do. We're going to get in the car. We're going to drive to the emergency room. We're going to talk to the intake specialist and we're going to figure out which one of us is right. Either we're at the right place and this is where you need to be, in which case she is right, or this is not the place for you to go. You're not sick. And then you will be able to say to me that you were right all along. Ha ha ha. So apparently, even in my depressed and and suicidal and delusional state, I still had the overwhelming desire to win an argument. Mm-hmm. We hopped in the car and off we went. And, you know, the rest is history, as they say. They took it very seriously. I was admitted to the hospital that night. I spent, you know, 3.5 days in a psychiatric ward. And it was the beginning of many, many, many things. But the thing that it was really the beginning of was that I was just completely wrong about the way that I viewed the world and the way that I thought my mind worked. Everything now had to be reconsidered, rethought, and reevaluated. I literally had to learn to be a person all over again.
Wow. So you said that she spotted it. What did she spot? What were the symptoms she was seeing? And she asked you point blank, are you thinking about killing yourself? What did she see in you that caused her to ask that question?
It's probably a little bit of a different, you know, we're going to go with some hearsay here in case any lawyers are listening. but she noticed the mania. She noticed the depression. She's told me since that, you know, when her and I first met, I was probably just a little bit manic, you know, maybe hypomanic or, you know, just a little bit manic, but you know, I'm a giant redheaded man. I'm loud. I'm funny. I'm the life of the party. I'm very charismatic and people flock to me. And you had a touch of mania and you get a guy that people want to be around. And that's where we were when her and I met. And, you know, she was attracted to that. Plus, I was younger, and I was adorable.
You were hot.
And that's
anyway.
Sort of, yeah, I was hot.
You were hot.
And that's, you know, that's when we started dating. But then there's a level that mania is no longer fun. It's nonsense. It's gibberish. You know, racing thoughts.
It wears you out, right? It'll wear you out.
Yeah. It not only does it wear you out, but it's nonsense. You know, you're in a car with a guy that you think is responsible, but all of a sudden he's driving 90 miles an hour in 25 mile an hour streets.
Yeah.
And when you ask him why he's driving that fast, he says because pickled Samsung go-karts have Logitech Knox audios on the roadways. Because
exactly.
He's thinking of 9 different things, and some of them are about computers, some of them are about television, some of them are about roads, and some of them are the questions that you ask. And he just picks out words of everything, and you're just... Now you're going 90 miles an hour in a residential street with a guy who's now saying gibberish. That's not so fun.
So the reason I asked you that is I'm trying to figure out for someone that may have a loved one in their life, whether it be a parent looking at their child or girlfriend or boyfriend or who knows, husband, wife. That's why I'm trying to get to the symptoms and exactly what you were doing, because as you said, there is a misunderstanding of this. So I'm trying to get to where someone can recognize this in their loved one so they can go get help like she brought you to the emergency room to get help.
The first thing that I want to say, and this is great blanket advice, if you suspect, seek help. There's nothing in the world wrong with being wrong. If you think that your loved one has bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, anxiety, just whatever, make an appointment with your general practitioner, get into a psychiatrist, see a therapist, ask some questions. There's nothing better to spend your time and resources on than living the best life possible. You know, so many people say, you know, I thought my loved one was sick, but I didn't want to embarrass them by taking them to the doctor. Why? There's only two possible outcomes. There was no reason to go, and now you know. Or there was a reason to go, and now you're in the right place. So, but specifically for bipolar disorder, if you're around somebody that on the one day is king of the world, they think that they are fantastic, amazing, they have just more confidence than humanly possible, and then the next day, they have no energy, low energy. They hate themselves. They hate everything else. They no longer find joy in the things that they found joy in previously. Those are pretty good bipolar indicators. Obviously, if somebody is not getting out of bed, not bathing, not taking care of themselves physically, and I don't mean like eating potato chips for dinner. I mean like not bathing, not you know, that kind of thing, missing a lot of work. Not taking care of things that they used to take a lot of care of. If all of a sudden the dog is, you know, using the bathroom in the house because they no longer let the dog out, so they're not taking care of their dog, they're not taking care of their house. These are good indicators that something might be up.
So yeah, we all have ups and downs, but as you just described, those are extremes. Not taking care of yourself, king of the world one day, down in the dumps, hate yourself, hate everything the next day, not finding joy in things that you previously found joy in. So those are correct. All good indicators, right, Gabe?
Yes, and it's also important to say, in general, people are boring. We all just have to accept this about ourselves. And they're boring because we're consistent. We are, in general, consistent. You know, if we like pizza on Tuesday, we like pizza next Tuesday. So, you know, look for those dramatic shifts. You know, people that go from one extreme to the other. You know, one minute they love you, the next minute they hate you. That's a red flag. You know, these are, again, people in general, they're pretty consistent. So, you know, once you start, you know, swinging back and forth like a pendulum, that's generally abnormal. Now, it doesn't mean bipolar disorder. It could mean many other things. So, again, you know, just check it out. I tell people all the time, just check it out. You literally have nothing to lose.
Right. And everything to gain, your whole life back.
Yes.
So you said you had to relearn how to be a human being. So how do you manage this now today? Are you on medication or have you just learned strategies to even yourself out?
Both. It really is like with many illnesses, you know, it's a multi-prong attack. You know, let's take diabetes as an example. You know, you need insulin shots and you need to eat healthier and you need to lose weight. Doing all three of those things will give you the best outcome. If you only do one of them, you'll have improvement, but not as much improvement as if you did all three. Sort of the same thing with mental illness, and I'm going to speak specifically for bipolar disorder. The medication is fantastic, and I'm so glad to have found the right combination of medicine to make my mood swings go from, you know, 100 miles on a 100-mile-long spectrum. Now I'm in like a 5-mile spectrum, so probably longer than the average person that's on, say, a 2.5-mile spectrum, but hey, I still get to be special, I suppose, but clearly manageable. But then I had to learn how to manage it. And, you know, there's some tricks. You know, there's coping skills and, you know, other things that I had to get over. You know, there was some trauma. Once I started, you know, we'll say in my right mind, which is a horrible way to phrase it, but for lack of a better word, Once I started getting healthier and I looked back at the damage that I had caused, I felt so bad. And the damage wasn't, you know, that bad. I don't want anybody to think that I blew up a school or anything crazy like that. It just, I wasn't nice to my mom. I mean, who's not nice to their mom? And I realized that, you know, bipolar disorder caused some of that. Racing thoughts caused some of that. Just not seeing the world and the situation for what it was caused it. But I still yelled at my mom. So I felt really, really bad. There was a trauma that went with it. So I had to learn to forgive myself. I had to learn how to apologize. We'll go back to the beginning of the hour. I had to learn how to apologize for something that arguably wasn't my fault, but was my responsibility. And I had to be okay with that. And I had to learn how to move forward to make sure that it doesn't happen again. And, you know, I was 25 years old when I was diagnosed, and here I am taking, you know, 11 pills a day. Now, that number might not be exact if somebody's following me around. It was 15 years ago. But, you know, most 25-year-olds take 0 pills a day. So all the other people that I knew were like, why are you taking so many pills? That's a lot of pills, dude. Why are you taking pills? And, you know, it kind of stings after a while. And I had to learn to just, you know, let it be and take the meds and not have this. One of the things that happens to people with bipolar disorder is we get better, we stop taking our meds. I never did that, but I had to learn not to do that. It's not because I'm innately better. It's not because I'm smarter, because I went to therapy and they warned me every day, here's what you're going to be thinking and here's how to avoid it. And I listened. All of those things together gets the awesome person that you see. Or hear.
And you are awesome. And it had to be comforting to your parents once you were diagnosed. They must have went, okay, we know what this is now. Now let's attack it and get you better.
Yes. When, you know, I was 25 when I was diagnosed, I was much older than the, you know, the average person is diagnosed between the ages of 16 and 23. Here I am 25. Again, nobody recognized it. I was able to get pretty far in life without anybody interceding. And the biggest reason for that is because my family believed that people with mental illness were violent. I'm not violent, so therefore I couldn't possibly have mental illness. And two, I had a job and money. And my parents, once again, myself included, believed that people with mental illness didn't have money. So I wasn't violent and I had money, therefore nothing was wrong. And that couldn't be more wrong. But that allowed me to get much older. But, you know, here I am 25 years old. My parents are now living, you know, in a completely different state, and they hear that their child has bipolar disorder. And one, as they have told me since, it filled in a lot of blanks for them. You know, why was I so difficult? Right. But it also made them feel, as they've told me in years past, like, oh my God, we tried to punish an illness out of our child. And that made them feel bad. So, you know, it was amazing that, you know, I had to apologize for being a handful because of bipolar disorder, and they apologized for trying to punish an illness out of me. So there's just, these really were moments that brought us closer together as a family, but it made us understand each other's position more because we were able to have those conversations. And I always like to take this time to say, my family is dramatically messed up. We are not perfect. We're not some Norman Rockwell painting. We still fight and yell, and we have different political views, and we're not perfect. Sometimes people are like, oh, I wish my mom was like that. Your mom probably is like that. I'm just hitting the high points. But, man, my mother makes great cookies, and I bet your mom makes great cookies too.
Fantastic. And you got that going for you. But as you were talking about your mom, it takes us back to when you said, if you think there's something wrong, go to the doctor. It doesn't hurt to be wrong if everything's okay, but chances are if there is something wrong, you're getting in there early to take care of it. So when you're talking about your parents trying to punish something out of you when it was clearly a disease, no matter what they did, it wasn't going to help. So if you think there's something wrong, go to the doctor and find out. So that's great advice right there.
I agree. That is excellent advice. And the person that said that, genius.
But I guess the overall good news, Gabe, is that once diagnosed, you can manage it and lead a productive, successful life. That's the good news.
One of the biggest misconceptions about bipolar disorder and about mental illness in general is that there's no recovery. Everybody's mileage may vary. I don't want to say that every person with every mental illness diagnosis can end up in all of the same spots, because we can't. For example, I have bipolar disorder. I live in the suburbs with my wife. Demi Lovato has bipolar disorder, and she's a famous pop star. So clearly, she has recovered better than I have. But that said, everybody's got to find where they best fit in the world, and we all want to be the best version of ourselves. And many of us, many people with a mental illness diagnosis, can be doing better than they're currently doing if they can get access to the right care and the right resources, and if they are able to put in the work. And of course, you're able to put in the work to get better if you have the right care and the right resources. It really does all fit together. So if treatment is available, recovery is likely. And what recovery looks like to everybody is unique and personal, mm-hmm. and we all have to find our way in the world. But it's so bad for me when I see people that just can't move forward because they don't have the ability or the resources to do so.
Well, it's got to be very frustrating for you to see someone like that. And back to Demi Lovato, you shouldn't be so hard on yourself. Is Demi Lovato on the Which Way Is Life podcast? No, she is not. Okay? And you are. You have achieved
That's
a certain
right.
status, my friend. You have achieved a certain status, darn it.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Well, coming up, we get the high five from Gabe. But first, if I could ask a favor, I have one simple goal for this podcast. I want people to really get something out of this that they can use in their own life to make their own life better, to have more joy, to have more happiness. So after the interview with Gabe, if you have an iTunes account, go find my show page on iTunes. Just search Which Way Is Life in the search bar. I'll pop up. Just go find the thing that says ratings and reviews. Click on that, give me a rating, give me a review, and by doing that, we gain a wider audience, and it gives us a chance to help more people, and that's what this podcast is all about. Coming up, we get the high five with Gabe. That is next. Which Way Is Life is brought to you by Audible.com, and just for listening to Which Way Is Life, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check it out. So if you like listening to podcasts like this one, you're going to love Audible.com. So I would recommend you check it out and browse all the books you can download for free with a 30-day trial. Just go to audibletrial.com/ and then type in Which Way Is Life. Again, that's audibletrial.com/ Which Way Is Life for your free audio book. Time for the high five with my guest today, Gabe Howard. Gabe, are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. Question number one. All right. Tell us about the bipolar T-shirt.
The bipolar T-shirt was it was kind of an accident. So it has the bipolar emoji on it, which is a happy face and a sad face, depending on how you look at it. So one mouth and two sets of eyes, two pairs. So and a long, long time ago, when I was but a young mental health advocate, I got a coupon for an online store. An online T-shirt printing company. I forget what the price was, but I ordered 25 black T-shirts with white print that had my little emoji on it, and it said GabeHoward.com, and that was 4 years ago, and I think I've sold a couple of thousand since then, and I didn't think I'd be able to sell the 25. I just kind of thought that it would be cute to give to my friends and family, and people keep buying them, and now I have mugs. I have a new shirt that's unveiling soon, and people just really, 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 really dig it. I dig it. It's really, really cool. You should check it out.
They are cool. I've seen them on your website, and we're going to put a link to your merchandise page on our show notes page at RadioMD.com. All right, question number two. Knowing what you know now, what advice would you give to your younger self?
Go to a psychiatrist. I mean, truly, it's hard to know what advice to give to myself other than that. I mean, I wish that at 18 years old, I would have, or 16, or who knows? I mean, I don't know what the perfect age is to be diagnosed with bipolar disorder for me to be diagnosed. But I wish somebody would have handed me a psychology book or something, just giving me something, because I wasted so much time. And while my story did turn out to have a happy ending, you know, I'm well and I'm good. Part of it's luck. I am so lucky that I ran into that woman because she saved my life. She saved my life by getting, you know, she was the first domino in the next thousand that were knocked over to get me to here. And mm-hmm. if I never would have met her, it could be a very, very, in fact, it's likely that it would have been a very different story.
Right.
And, you know, it's a little bit scary to think that I'm here because of luck.
Mm-hmm. There's that saying that God puts certain people in your life when you need them the most. And that could be the case when she came into your life.
Very true.
Question number three, in your advocacy, you try to entertain and inform. And I love talking to you. You are a funny guy, but you use humor in inspirational stories. So why humor?
People are scared of mental illness. Well, first, let me back up. One, people are scared of mental illness. But two, people are people. And people don't like to be bored. And I mean, it just... asking somebody to sit down for an hour and listen to the dry ins and outs of mental illness and mental health advocacy and how to diagnose people and the definition of bipolar disorder and the definition of depression, one, I don't think I'd be capable of not using humor. I just tried to make that little segment as boring as possible, and I still thought I heard a giggle. So you know, I've got to play to my strengths. But two, I really feel like if you want the unvarnished truth about mental illness, you can pick up a textbook. You can hire a doctor or a researcher or a lecturer to come in, and they will teach you everything that you want to know. But that's not how the real world works. You know, people like to be entertained, but they also want information. And I have found that if you can entertain somebody and drop some knowledge on them, they retain it. They listen. They pay attention. And this is how people like to consume information. It's why, you know, it's why newspapers have, you know, opinion sections, and it's why the media hires pretty people to deliver it, because we want to be entertained while we're getting our news. You know, the news could just be, you know, a black screen with white text scrolling above with a person in monotone reading it. That would still be the news, but nobody tune in. It's the same thing here. One, right. I don't think I'm capable of being anything other than funny. And two, people pay attention and learn more when they're entertained while educated.
And that's why a billion gazillion people listen to this podcast.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's it. Well, even you said earlier, we're drawn to the uncommon. And humorous stories are very relatable. And they do stick in your mind. And a funny story is sometimes out of the ordinary, and it will stick in the mind. So you were talking about that earlier.
Exactly.
It's coming full circle here, baby. Okay. Question number four. Do you have a favorite quote you can share with us?
My favorite quote is probably, "It is what it is." And I'm somewhat ashamed that that's what it is. I mean, it's so snarky, and I even say it snarky. But it's the one that I go back to all the time. You know, sometimes things are just because they are. There's not an answer. Sometimes things just are this way because they are this way. And, you know, maybe it's a form of radical acceptance. Maybe it's just a form of generic acceptance. But, you know, sometimes it just is what it is.
And you can drive yourself crazy trying to figure it out. If you overthink it, you know what? It is what it is. Like you said, accept it and move on. Because
exactly.
It is what it is. All right. Question number five. Finish this sentence. Throughout my life, the most important thing I've learned is...
I'm not really good at learning lessons. Let's see. Throughout my life, the most important thing I've learned is to listen to other people. I love people. I'm a people watcher. I'm a people person. I'm fascinated by people. And I'm often surprised that people don't want to listen to other people, especially if those other people disagree with them. I love people that disagree with me. Everything that I have learned in my entire life has come from somebody that I didn't agree with, because I thought something different before I met them. And I really think that that's a theme in my life, is just to listen to what people have to say. There's no rule that you have to agree with them. There's not even a rule that you have to like them. But the older I get, the more I appreciate hearing about different people's experiences, how they feel, what's important to them, what they find funny. People are utterly fascinating. and incredibly annoying. But mostly, it's the one thing that binds us all is just the fact that we're all alive right now. And I think that we need to honor that more. I think we do more to separate ourselves than we should. And I just really love people, almost to an annoying degree.
I couldn't agree with you more. And that's very timely in our super hyper partisan world we live in right now, between Republicans and Democrats. You know, we probably have a lot more in common than not. And if we just, instead of shouting past each other or looking past each other, like you said, if you take the time to listen to somebody else's viewpoint and they do the same for you, you would probably learn something you didn't know, and you'd probably be able to reach common ground. And I wish our government would do that right now.
Yes.
So good. Yes.
Everything you just said in a bag of chips. Perfect.
Yes. Bam. No, it is so true there. So I love how you had to say that, though, because really we all are so varied and different. And that's what makes this world terrific and this country is terrific. But we just need to learn to listen and embrace. And I think we would be a much better collective if we did that. See the goodness that you're spreading here, Gabe? You're just spreading goodness all over. It's just dripping. Goodness is just dripping all over the place. I love it. I don't know if that's the right visual.
I hope you have
visual.
Janitorial service. We'll get it cleaned up.
I don't know if that's the right visual, but yes, it's something like that. Well, Gabe, thank you for your time. How can we connect with you?
I am easy to find. I am GabeHoward.com. That's GabeHoward.com. I've had that domain since 1995. I knew it would come in handy eventually. But yeah, GabeHoward.com. Everything you want to know about me and more can be found there. It's all the places that I write. It's all the places that I talk. It's just everything. My email address is even on there, for Pete's sake.
How about that? And we're going to put a link to that on the show notes page as well. Well, Gabe, thank you again. I'm going to leave you with one of my favorite quotes as we end the show here today. Remember to enjoy the little things in life, because one day you will look back and realize they were the big things. Gabe, thank you again for your time today.
You are very welcome. Thank you for having me, Bill.
So much fun talking with Gabe today. I hope you got something out of that. I know that I did, and so cool of him to share his story, his very personal story, with all of us, and there's a lot to learn from his story. And thank you for listening to Which Way Is Life. And again, if you could, jump over to iTunes, give me a rating and review if you liked what you heard today. It gives us a chance to help more and more people. Which Way Is Life is produced by RadioMD.com, award-winning health podcast. I'd also like to thank my producer, Pamela Moore. I'm Bill Klaproth. You can find me at Which Way Is Life on Twitter, and same thing on Facebook, at Which Way Is Life. Just hit it up in the search bar and you'll find me. You can also check out the show notes at RadioMD.com for all of my episodes. Thanks for listening, and stay well.